this is who I am. And the person, the soul of me, transcends all of these different labels about myself. And I have made a special effort to do that. And there's no difference in my doing that as an Asian American or as a gay person. You know, the world is not what we think. We have our own stereotypes of how people react to us, as well as their stereotypes of what we're all about. And we mustn't forget, it takes a lot of energy to constantly break down those stereotypes for ourselves, as well as our expectations that they will do the same for us.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Canadian government vows marriage equality, Mexican activists lament toothless anti-bias legislation, and following Fu through a family's tragedy and triumph. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out. I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 21st, 2003. Canada's government will act to legislate full equal marriage rights for gay and lesbian couples. In response to a series of judicial decisions climaxed by last week's ruling by Ontario's highest court that immediately opened marriage to same-gender couples, Prime Minister Jean Chrétien announced this week,
"We will not be appealing the recent decision on the definition of marriage. Rather, we'll be proposing legislation that will protect the right of churches and religious organizations to sanctified marriage as they define it. At the same time, we will ensure that our legislation includes and legally recognizes the union of same-sex couple."
Parliamentary passage of the government's marriage bill is believed to be a sure thing. Although the ruling Liberal Party will allow its members to vote their consciences, more than two-thirds of them are supportive, as are the Bloc Québécois and New Democratic Party, and some members of the Conservative Party. The largest opposition party, the Right Wing Alliance, is vehemently against same-gender marriage, but acknowledges that the government's decision not to appeal the court decisions has already made it law. Before the government brings its marriage bill to the Parliament, it will ask the Supreme Court of Canada to review it. While that review could delay the legislation for many months, it could also serve to preempt legal challenges to it. One key question is jurisdiction, since Canadian law divides jurisdiction over marriage so that provinces register marriages while federal statutes define the institution.
The provincial government of Conservative Alberta, which historically has fought against every gay and lesbian civil rights advance, has already declared it will never issue marriage licenses to same-gender couples and will refuse to recognize their marriages contracted elsewhere. It will invoke the so-called notwithstanding clause to sidestep the equality guarantees of the National Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the province's own three-year-old so-called Marriage Act, which restricts marriage to one man and one woman. Most believe Alberta will ultimately lose the legal battle. And only a bare majority of Alberta residents share their government's position, according to recent polling. The mayor of Banff, a prime wedding destination, believes gay and lesbian marriages would be an economic boon for the city. Calgary gay couple Keith Purdy and Rick Kennedy have already set their challenge in motion, this week applying for a marriage license and immediately filing a complaint with the Alberta Human Rights Commission when the registry clerk refused them. Alberta so far stands alone among the provinces, with the governments of nine others affirming this week that they'll comply once the federal redefinition of marriage is in place. Those affirmations came from British Columbia, Manitoba, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Quebec, and Saskatchewan.
The question increasingly facing those provinces is whether to begin marrying gays and lesbians now, and Federal Justice Minister Martin Cauchon said it would be a good thing if they did. The pressure is particularly intense in British Columbia, where the province's highest court already affirmed equal marriage rights, but suspended the impact of its ruling to allow time for legislative action. The gay and lesbian plaintiffs are asking that court to lift the suspension, since the BC government is unwilling to change policy ahead of the federal law. At the moment, Ontario is the only province issuing marriage licenses to same-gender couples, but that will force other provinces to make some changes. In New Brunswick, gay couple Wayne Toole and Art Fatour are threatening to file a human rights complaint since Fatour was refused the chance to change his name to Vatour Toole following their marriage this week in Ontario. Polls find national support for equal marriage rights running about 54%, but some Canadians are strongly opposed. About 600 evangelical Christians rallied outside a courthouse in Toronto this week to protest last week's appellate court ruling.
But same-gender couples' demand for marriage licenses continues to keep Ontario's city clerks very busy indeed. Those couples are coming from all over Canada and so far about a quarter from outside the country. In Toronto this week, openly gay city councillor Kyle Ray married his partner Mark Reed, the first politician to do so.
It was an easy decision to take, but it was one that we had been denied thinking about for the 9 years of our relationship. Now that obstacle has been removed, and we will now do what other Canadians have been able to do when they've chosen to do that.
When Toronto holds its huge Pride celebration at the end of the month, the city clerk's office will stay open on Saturday and Sunday for visitors wishing to marry. While U.S. activists believe Canada's example can only advance their own struggle for recognition of same-gender couples, they continue to urge U.S. gays and lesbians to consider carefully before crossing the border to marry. They've also called for unity in any attempt to challenge U.S. legal barriers to the status of those marriages, noting that the wrong kind of test cases could serve to hurt the cause.
At the other U.S. border, Mexico's President Vicente Fox has signed into law a broad civil rights measure, including a prohibition against discrimination based on sexual preferences. To the disappointment of some, it does not criminalize such discrimination. Instead, it creates a national council to prevent discrimination, which can receive complaints, discuss them with alleged perpetrators, and publicly condemn violations. The law also requires federal agencies to take steps against discrimination and calls for a national campaign to promote tolerance. The Roman Catholic Church is among those expressing concerns that the new law will restrict free speech, while minority groups complain that it's toothless. A bill has already been introduced in Mexico's Senate that would provide harsher penalties for discrimination.
The expanding European Union's Constitutional Convention has produced a draft that would explicitly prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, despite strong opposition from the Roman Catholic Church, and name combating social exclusion and discrimination as an EU objective. These are notable victories for activists who'd feared the EU would water down its commitment to social justice. Parts of the draft constitution, including what steps will actually be taken against discrimination, are still under consideration by the convention, and the whole still faces a series of meetings by representatives of the governments of current and future EU member nations in its long process towards adoption.
One of the EU member candidates, Slovakia, has grudgingly added to its revised labor code an explicit prohibition against employers asking workers about their sexual orientation. Gays and lesbians are not granted the actual protection from employment discrimination that apply to bias based on gender, race, and physical ability. The move represents a political compromise in a sharply divided parliament, but activists and their supporters will continue to seek stronger protections from anti-gay bias.
It's now generally expected that a partnership bill will be announced by Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair in the Queen's speech outlining the agenda for the next legislative session. The British government's discussion paper on legal registered partnerships for gay and lesbian couples had been expected at the end of this month. That may be delayed by a cabinet reshuffle that replaced the equality minister, although Barbara Roche's replacement, Jackie Smith, is seen as equally gay supportive.
Britain's Union of Liberal and Progressive Synagogues this week adopted a ritual for rabbis to bless same-gender couples, following in the footsteps of the U.S. Reform sect of Judaism. The U.K. group said the ritual exemplified its values of equality and inclusion, and it hoped it would bring estranged gay and lesbian Jews back into religious life. More Orthodox Jewish rabbis in Britain reacted with dismay.
Jerusalem's second Pride March, already delayed for a week by a terrorist bombing whose victims included a Pride organizer, was further marred by a right-wing group's attack on the rainbow banners hanging along city streets. Some 20 to 30 of the 100 flags were pulled down and destroyed, with the long-banned far-right group Kach claiming credit for the action. Nonetheless, with a heavy security presence, several thousand people marched peacefully after observing a minute of silence for all victims of violence in the Middle East. On the same evening, a Pride March was held in Haifa for the first time, organized by the Haifa Forum for the Gay Community.
In Australia, Tasmania's state government has introduced its measure to open adoption to gay and lesbian couples. After intense controversy, what had been planned to be full equal adoption rights for same-gender couples has been reduced to a move allowing a co-parent to co-adopt a partner's biological child. The adoption debate has almost overshadowed the rest of the government's sweeping move to advance legal recognition of same-gender partners and other non-traditional relationships by creating Australia's first partnership registry and amending more than 100 state laws. The state's lower house will debate the measure shortly, but the upper house won't take it up until reconvening after its break.
And finally, New Zealand's national government is also sweating out a parenting measure introduced last week. Its Care of Children Bill is intended to provide a long overdue update to laws on parental and guardianship status. The Labor government's more socially conservative partner, the United Future Party, has backed away from the bill, and that could leave it languishing in committee, although Labor is still hoping that Green Party support can carry it forward. Among numerous other provisions, the bill actually allows for recognition of three parents in the case of a lesbian couple who raised the child of a sperm donor who wishes to be named as father. But members of parliament, particularly the opposition, have made their greatest fuss over the language of the bill, which would technically label a lesbian co-parent a father.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending June 21st, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
Hi, my name is Billy Bean, and I was a Major League Baseball player from 1986 to 1995. I started with the Detroit Tigers. I played for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres. I am gay, and you're listening to a show that hits it out of the park every week. This Way Out Radio Magazine.
He's played M. Butterfly on the New York stage and the idealistic prison chaplain Father Ray Mukata on the HBO cable drama Oz, and he's currently featured as forensic psychiatrist George Wang on NBC TV's Law and Order Special Victims Unit. And when his real life became the drama, actor, gay man, and father B.D. Wong became an author. Wong talked about the genesis of his book, Following Fu, The Electronic Adventures of the Chestnut Man, a memoir, in part one of his interview with This Way Out's Josie Catoggio.
When I first wrote the first email to say, this very sad thing has happened, we've had our sons 3 months early, only one of them has made it. A week later, Jackson was having surgery on his tiny little intestines, and I wrote back to say, please pray for us. And they wrote back again to say, we're praying for you, and God bless you, and I'm thinking of you. And someone found out about it, passed it on the word to a literary agent. HarperCollins bought the book, and all of a sudden there's this object that tells the entire story.
As their conversation concludes, Wong discusses how queer parents are changing societal perceptions and challenges the divisive stereotypes that are held by people of every sexual orientation.
I've often felt that gay parents are like ambassadors to the rest of the world because they're the ones that are forced to interact with, you know, schools and medical people and everybody.
Right.
And through this whole process, you manage to, and Fu himself, the baby, manages to make everybody just love and accept you as another parent with an ill child who's dealing with the system. And I want you to tell the story about the funeral home in Modesto, because that was so amazing.
Well, before I tell it, I'll say that the reason why I think you want me to tell it is because this situation of the medical crisis, just to put it succinctly, is so human and so universal that it indeed upstages any kind of eccentricity like being an alternative family, being a gay dad. You know, I don't really like the term gay dad. It's so, to me, somehow labely. You know, it's like, well, gay dad, that seems so crazy. My gayness
like
and my fatherhood
doctor.
Are not related at all.
Yes.
Yeah. So what happened when we went to, we were in Modesto, when we were having to airlift Jackson to San Francisco, we realized there were all of these loose ends to tie up, and one of them was to take care of the remains of my
Boaz, my dear Boaz,
who didn't make it. And so we were asked by the funeral home to come and sign some papers, and we had to sign the papers so that we could have the release. Richie and I would both sign the release form, because we weren't sure who would have to come back and drive up to Modesto to pick up the ashes once they were prepared.
And also at the last minute, the day before, you managed to get the legal right
yes.
to both be parents, which for many people takes a really long time.
Yes, we were
so I was
lucky.
Amazed that you were able to push that through so quickly.
Right. We got the judgment from the judge in California to put both of our names on the birth certificate and the death certificate. And Shauna waived her right as a parent to be listed on that, you know, brilliant as she is. And so we went to this funeral home, and the people that went were Richie and I, and my brother and Doris, his wife, my sister-in-law, and Richie's mom, Grandma Carol. And we went to this, when we went to the funeral home, it could not have been more kind of archaic and Victorian, like a lot of, it's just like Fisher and Sons from 6 Feet Under. It's this old building with, you know, kind of a sense of kind of staleness to it that was kind of creepy. It was like the Addams Family kind of, you know. I write a lot about it and kind of make fun of it in the book.
You talk about dark shadows
yes.
and the guy looking like Barnabas
right.
Collins.
Well, the guy
that
comes
dates
out.
Us, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it sure does, right. Sure it does. Well, the whole book, I'm perfectly, perfectly unabashedly dating myself throughout the entire book. But besides that, we go to this place and this man comes out, and he's rather austere and kind of, like I say, like he reminded me of Barnabas Collins, although that's quite an exaggeration. And he sits down at this big desk, and we sit down, and he has all these papers in front of us. And I started thinking, I realized at that point, oh my gosh, how is he going to react to this? What am I going to have to say to explain this all to him? And this happened infrequently throughout the whole time we were in the hospital, you know, wondering how people would react to this unique and wonderful to us situation, but how would they react? And he sits down and he says, okay, now you're Richie, right? Because he had spoken to Richie on the phone, and Richie had taken the arrangements, and Richie was listed as Richard Allen Jackson on the death certificate. And he says, yes, you're Richie. And then he just looked up at the other four people that were in the room, and he said, B.D. Wong. And he looked around, and he looked at my brother, and he looked at my sister-in-law first, Doris, but she was sitting with my brother. And then he looked at Richie's mom, who was, you know, in her 60s, and he just looked around. He said, B.D. Wong. And I said, oh, that's me. And he said, that's you. And I said, yes. And he looked back down at the papers. And then he said, who are the parents? And I said, and Richie said simultaneously, we are. And we just waited. And he looked. He said, you are. And he looked down at the papers again. And then he smiled slightly. And after what I thought was the longest pause in my entire life, he said, I see. And he just kept going. And we signed the papers, and it was a wonderful moment in my awareness of what the world really is. You know, the world is not what we think. We have our own stereotypes of how people react to us, as well as their stereotypes of what we're all about. And we mustn't forget that it takes a lot of energy to constantly break down those stereotypes for ourselves, as well as our expectations that they will do the same for us. And in fact, a few days later, he called Richie on the phone and he said, you know, it's Mr. So-and-so from Franklin and Downs, the funeral home. And oh, Richie said, oh my goodness, hello. And thank you for rushing that all through with us. And what else is it that we needed? Did we pay you? And do we need to sign any more papers, or what does it need? And the man said, no. I was just calling because everyone here at the funeral home was just wondering how Boaz's brother was doing. Is he doing all right? And it was amazing because Richie said when he told the story, and then he said he wanted to know if Jackson was all right. He wasn't calling about Boaz or the business or whatever. He was just calling to see if our son was okay. And that was amazing. You know, it was an incredible kind of great, wonderful feeling to have this experience in what seemed to be the most old-fashioned place on earth, in a very old-fashioned town, a small town, Modesto, which can't seem to stay out of the news, actually. And it just kind of brought it all around for me that, you know what, it's not that big a deal. It really is not that big a deal. I knew it wasn't that big a deal. Richie knew that it wasn't that big a deal. Everyone listening to us knows that it's not that big a deal. But there are other people that think so, too. And we got to give them a chance to kind of come out, as it were. And, you know, it's the beginning. It was the beginning of us kind of expressing or presenting ourselves as a family to strangers. And we continued to do so throughout those months in the intensive care nursery. And we found the first, you know, certainly the medical care was totally colorblind and sexual orientation blind and everything. Everyone treated in that intensive care nursery is treated regardless. Their babies are treated with such love and care, regardless of their color or what kind of parents they have, or how many parents they have, or, you know, any number of things that make the parents unique. They were all treated the same, and they were all treated with love and dignity, and it was a remarkable, inspiring place to be. And so I think that partly inspired me to write about them in the emails, which in turn have become this book.
This is Josie Catoggio for This Way Out, and I'm talking with B.D. Wong about his book, Following Foo.
You know, I learned a certain kind of way of presenting myself as an actor who is Asian American because I really loathe being labeled an Asian American actor, of course. I am a person who has learned a craft, worked hard to develop it. I try to channel my talent as best I can in all of the work that I do, hopefully to some kind of success. And being reduced to, like you said before, a category is not fun for me. And so I always try to make sure people understand this is who I am. Again, this is who I am. And the person, the soul of me, transcends all of these different labels about myself. And I have made a special effort to do that. And there's no difference in my doing that as an Asian American or as a gay person. And so I've put that soul forward first and foremost and try to let that show before I kind of even share the information in some ways. And so the book does that. The book says this book is about a family and, oh yeah, by the way, you know what? There's two dads and there's this crazy, crazy process that we went through, modern technological process that reinvents the family and redefines what family means. And yeah, that's true. This baby came from that incredible journey. But really, the journey of humanity that we went on after we went through the journey of becoming a family is what the book is about. And that is why the book is entirely universal to anybody. Just about anybody that has ever had a parental relationship, whether they be the son or the father, I think can appreciate the emotion and the feelings that are in the book.
Well, I was so touched not just by the emails from your all of your show business people,
right,
because they tend to be more accepting because they've had to deal with gay
people a lot.
Of course,
that's a given, really.
But that both of your families, I mean, to all of their extensions and in-laws and everybody, was just so supportive.
Certainly. And my own personal point of view is that I've always thought of my aunts and uncles as these kind of stoic Chinese ancestry type characters that didn't quite know what to make of me or my eccentricities as an artist and actor. You know, I was very non-traditional in every
respect. Yes, you're not the model minority.
I was not the model minority nor the model son in their eyes or the model nephew or whatever. And there they were just saying, oh, you know, I send you my love and their respect and there was no judgment. There was no even kind of confusion about what it was that I was doing, or who what the role, my role as a parent, or anything like that. It was remarkable. I thought of them as old fashioned, and then I came away thinking, you know what, they're you know, that's again my own stereotype of what their trip is.
Were they freaked that your partner is Jewish?
Oh no, not at all. I mean, listen, they can get over the fact that he's a guy and he has
exactly,
a penis.
Yeah.
Then I think they can get over the fact that, you know, that he's Jewish. No, there's no getting there. That's the thing, you know, Josie. They didn't seem to be a lot of having to get over anything. And as it turns out, you and I both know there isn't anything to get over. And maybe that was refreshing for me to realize that I could maybe relax a little bit about the whole getting over idea. So that's wonderful.
Well, how did you all survive the terrible twos toddler stage?
I have to say, without sounding too much like a bragging father, you know, that he seems to have a remarkable temperament. And I think this has something to do with his origin and the situation in the hospital that he endured and persevered. I believe that there are traits that we have that are with us from birth. Perhaps gayness is one of them. Perhaps not. I don't know for sure. I sense that it probably is. But for him, in his case, I think that perseverance and resilience were one of those things. And also a joy of in living and a desire to be on the earth. So all of those things combined are, I believe, the things that kind of got him through it. We take him to the doctor now for well checkups, and he gets a shot, you know, an injection, and he's rather tolerant.
Wow.
Rather, he yelps a little bit, and then, hey, he's okay, and he's moving on to the next thing. And that's the kind of person that can get through 3 months in the intensive care ward. Resilience, joy, a desire to be here. He wakes up with a huge smile on his face every morning and says, what's next? And I love a person like that. I just want to be like that. I hope I'm like that. My dad is like that. My dad just had his 80th birthday. And, you know, I see myself in my dad all the time. I read from the book in the bookstores. I can't stop crying. My dad's a big crier. My dad approaches life with an emotional eye. And I think I do the same thing. I think that's probably evident if you read the book. And I like to think that Jackson will have that. I know that he loves life the way I perceive my dad to. Even at this early stage, I see that. And so I'm thrilled at the idea of watching him as the years go by and seeing it develop further. And so I gave him my dad's name partly because of that. Maybe that was a gift that we gave him because my dad has such wonderful qualities when it comes to looking at life and finding the most positive things in life.
Well, to Fu Wong, thanks for everything.
Thanks for everything, yes.
This is Josie Cotoggio for This Way Out. I've been talking with B.D. Wong about his book Following Fu, published by HarperCollins. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Fenceberry, Rex Walkner, Jason Lynn, Graham Underhill, and Josie Cotoggio contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. And thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can now bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for our logo at AlternaBid.com. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KEOS College Station, Texas, WFCS New Britain, Connecticut, MVS Radio Amsterdam, the Netherlands, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we invite you to stay tuned.